welcome to Celebrating Success. Thank you for joining me. I'm Pauline Barclay, author of 9 published books. My latest is a cozy mystery, Past Secrets and Lies, the second in the Gardner and Chataway Cozy Mystery series. I'm also the founder of Chill Awards for Independent Authors. Celebrating Success is about meeting a variety of people from all walks of life and interests. Today on Celebrating Success, I am delighted to be talking to Michael Reedy. Michael was brought up in New England, USA, and has spent many decades living in England. His career has been varied and extremely interesting, from serving in the USA Marines to teaching English in the USA and UK, before moving into the PR and marketing sector. To add to this impressive list, Michael is also an award-winning author with 18 books published. Please sit back and welcome my wonderful guest. Hi, Michael. Wonderful to meet you at last.
Nice to meet you too, Pauline.
We've been talking to each other for quite some years now, in particular regarding your books. And I believe you've got nearly 20 books published. Yes, but before we go on to your books, I'd like to talk a little bit about you, because you're from New England. And also, you've had quite an interesting career life.
Yes, it was. I grew up in New England, went to university there, and then was faced with the draft during the Vietnam War and managed to get myself trained as a journalist in the United States Navy and served aboard an aircraft carrier that spent a lot of time in the Mediterranean. And it was that experience that taught you to write on demand, regardless of what was going on around you. And when you had planes landing on your roof and 6 other people trying to do things in the office, it was pretty good for the concentration. After that, I finished a master's degree in English in the States and on a whim applied to teach in England. And that turned to 10 years of teaching in England.
Well, whereabouts in England did you teach?
I started off in St. Albans and finished up in London. Right. And absolutely loved it. And then moved back to the States because I'd only intended to stay for 2 years and it had turned into 10.
So you just should have done a maths degree, really, shouldn't you?
Yes.
Sorry, I interrupt.
And I did some teaching back in the States. Then other opportunities came up in the UK, and I came back over, taught here for a couple more years, and then had 25 years with a PR and marketing company, a very specialist one that focused on graphic arts subject. So. Anything to do from forestry and paper making up through digital imaging. So if nothing else, I could bore you for 40 minutes about self-adhesive labels.
So 25 years, that means you obviously love England because you are still here.
I'm still here.
From your obviously lots of writing with your PR and marketing years, you went into writing your own books and publishing them. And I know from the list, there's at least 18. I think there's more, but I counted 18.
18 is the current number.
Is the current number. And they're all quite varied.
Yes.
I know you do short stories and you do, some of your stories actually talk about your experiences when you were in the Navy in the USA.
Yes.
I know that that comes through on there. Latterly, you've written 2 books, which absolutely amazed me. I thought they were fantastic. And that was The Countess Comes Home.
Yes.
Brilliant book. That one. And the other one was The Circle of Vanity.
Yes.
And both of those books, there's a lot of dialogue in those, Michael. But my words, don't they set the scene of what is happening?
I think dialogue is great to move a story forward, and trying to keep your characters sounding different enough to keep them interested and varying the pace so that Some speak in long sentences, some say just a few words. That's a real challenge, I think, for any sort of writing. But I very much enjoy writing dialogue, and I love the novels of Evelyn Waugh and Anthony Pohl, both of whom would do these wonderful oblique exchanges where somebody's remark wouldn't quite fit with a previous comment. And it would really make you stop and think whether this was a serious point being made or just a humorous one.
Well, it's quite interesting. Yeah, it's quite interesting because reading your books, your English, you sound like the perfect English gentleman with the dialogue. Absolutely. So obviously English has become very much part, your English. I'm not denigrating American English, but you do come across as very much an English gentleman in some of your books.
It, again, that's affectation. It's simple. It's faking it.
You do extremely well.
To a great extent. And I've got no pretensions in that direction at all. But it's, I think when people read an English novel, they're looking for that Britishness. And that's whether they are British or American, for example. And that's what I like focusing on, is that cultural difference. And so much of that cultural difference stems from the language. I'm still finding, working with proofreader and editor, words and phrases that mean completely different things in American and in English and British English. And discovering these after living here 50 years, basically, is quite amazing that I haven't discovered them all yet. Simple ones, the Americans will use extend when they mean expand, and but they're subtly different here. And the word quite, of course, is such a British one. But if you say you quite liked meeting somebody in America, that meant you very much liked meeting them. But if you said you quite liked meeting someone over here, it was kind of, I could have done without that.
Yes, that's true, isn't it?
And so, I learned that one the hard way, actually.
So, Michael, tell me, at what point did you think, I want to write novels and get them published? Because 18 novels later...
Yeah, I really wanted to write novels from the time I was at university. I tried a couple. I tried writing some short stories. The markets were... you know, very competitive. It was very hard to get anything anywhere. I satisfied the publishing by seeing my press releases and features published, first in the Navy and then later on. I've done over 3,000 articles and features over that, 25, 30 years. But I kept writing short stories or making notes for short stories and novels. It was my son who said when I retired, he said, well, get your act together and get these things published. And so there were two or three of them that were essentially in the bag. So I tidied them up then decided to go to the independent route because they were so varied. They were such different books and no publisher wants different books from people. You all of a sudden you don't want Dick Francis writing about cookery or something, was I going to do historical stuff? Well, yes. Was I going to do American stuff? Yes. Was I going to do British stuff? Yes. And working independently and publishing independently certainly allows that to happen. And also the quantity, because everything's been published in the 8 years since I retired from the agency. So no publisher would put up with that.
You're a prolific writer, Michael. And I must say, I've read quite a few of your books. And there is a theme there, though. The ones I've read, once you get to hear your voice in the book, I know it's you, because
I hear what you say about what publishers does want. They want the same old format. But if they took the time to read your books, they would hear your voice in all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. There are common themes. I don't mind having murders and things like that happen, but I don't like blood and guts and chainsaws. And I don't like mob violence and gang violence. I have no experience of it, and I don't think I could write about it. It just doesn't interest me.
But your books still have a page-turning quality, particularly the Circle of Vanity. That absolutely fascinated me, that book. It was incredible. Lots of dialogue, sitting down, talking through things, yet at the same time you still wanted to turn that page to find out if there's going to be the answer.
That was a really fun book to write. There was a fair bit of research in that, and a good bit of bluff as well. I really enjoyed writing it because I couldn't wait to see how it turned out. Because I have no idea usually when I write where something's going to end up.
But it worked very well because for me and my husband, we loved Fake or Fortune on the television. So your book was an absolute joy to think something very similar to that Fake or Fortune.
That's right. It kicks off with a quote or with the example from Fake or Fortune, yes.
But the twists and turns in there, I'm going to give nothing away, but the twists and turns in there really does keep you going. Are they right? Are they wrong? Is it this? Is it that? Very cleverly done.
I think I've always loved art history, and I've always loved art. And I think it stemmed from the fact that when I was about 8 or 9 years old, my mother took me to the then largest Picasso exhibition ever. It was in Philadelphia, and I think it toured around America. And if you can imagine it, Picasso himself had lent Guernica to the exhibition. If you can imagine Guernica leaving Spain today, I mean, it just wouldn't happen. And I still remember going through that exhibition and thinking and listening to her comments, because she was an artist, she was trained as an artist as well. And there was, she'd say things, oh, well, that's just silly, or, you know, what do you think that is? And, you know, really try to engage me in the experience of looking at it. And it's all grown from there. A couple of the other books and stories talk about art too. So that's one of the themes, that and music.
Fantastic. So have we got something to look forward to, Michael?
Well, I think at the end of Circle of a Vanity, there was an unresolved relationship with one of the portrait sitters, and I think we're going to resolve that at some stage.
Oh, lovely. We're going to see her again.
And then I think just as an experiment, I'd love to try writing a cozy murder. And because I think they're fun, and I think it's evolving into an interesting genre, as I've mentioned elsewhere. And I think it would just be fun to try it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael, I'm really looking forward to you doing something like that. And I can say from experience, they are fun to write. They really are. I don't know what it is about them, but I found them fun. Like you, I don't want blood and gore and nasty murders. I want things to happen, and then the whole world to be put to rights again.
Yeah, that's sort of an Alfred Hitchcock technique, isn't it? You know, the murder itself is insignificant, except maybe in Torn Curtain, where you have that very violent murder. But the rest of them are fairly straightforward, and they're almost incidental to what's going on. It's the person who's being chased, and the people doing the chasing where all the action is.
And of course, the nice thing about Cozy Mysteries is it does work a lot on the characters. So you can build a lot with the characters rather than all the police procedure and that side of it. And that's the side I quite enjoy, was building my characters and making them as much part of the story as the incidents that they were actually involved in. Mm. Yes. We've got something exciting to look forward to, Michael.
I don't know. But one of the things I'm going to have to overcome here is there are really no villains in my books. You know, there are people that people don't get on with and don't like, but there are no overt villains. And
well, there are little, there are little iffy people in your book.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's life.
They're on the borderline.
They're on the borderline, but they, you know, presumably you don't have villains in your life, people that are just determined to take you out or ruin your life.
No, this is no matter what.
So I think villains are a bit artificial, melodramatic. And
well, you can take a character and turn them around just a little bit. One of my characters in the book, I did meet somebody some years ago who was, well, they thought they were being nice, but they were actually being anything but. So I introduced them as one of my characters, and to make them, they think they're doing a good thing, but all they're doing is annoying everybody around them.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, there are people that would say something to you like, oh, I always loved you in that dress. Meaning, haven't you got anything new? But they're not really a villain. It's a different level of being obnoxious.
Yeah, but I'm sure you'll come up with something.
I've got obnoxious people, but I don't have many real villains, not on the James Bond level or something like that.
Well, no, but Cozy Mysteries isn't about that level. I don't think. Perhaps I'm the one that's got it wrong.
I think one of the things that my books do usually have, except for the short stories, which deliberately have ambiguous endings, is that the novels are usually pretty well resolved. You know, order is restored. And I think, you know, that's a satisfactory ending. That's what people want, I think.
I think people, I know from myself, I know from the readers I have on Chill, most of them want an ending where they go, that's great.
Yes. Yeah.
So they put the book down, I'm glad I read that book. They don't go away thinking, oh my God, I'm too scared to go out.
I love books when you don't know what's happening, you know, where you don't know what's going to happen. You're not guessing the ending. And you really can't see where they're going. You know, they're fascinating, they're well written, and you go through, but you think, how is this ever going to end? And then all of a sudden, the writer brings it together and it just snaps shut. And the writer Robert Goddard is very like that. I don't even know how to describe his novels. They're thrillers, they're all kinds of other things, but he has these real trap-like plots. And another one, it's one of my favorites, is Special Projects in Calamity Physics by Marisha Pessel. Absolutely brilliant, erudite novel. And you read through it and you think, this is fantastic. And you just can't see who's causing the trouble. And then all of a sudden, bam, you know, and she gets you at the end. It's wonderful to read.
Well, you've got so much to work from there, Michael. Do you know, Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. As you know, I tend to keep my podcast around the 20 minutes just till we get it all sorted and my listeners don't miss one word of my guests. What I'd like to say is thank you for meeting me today. And will you come back later in the year and tell us a little bit more about the two new books that are due to come out? I know they're still on and pen and paper yet, but I'd like you to come back and talk more, please.
That would be a pleasure. And it's been lovely to chat with you this afternoon.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you again for calling. I'll catch up with you again very soon. Thank you, Michael, for joining me. And a special thank you to all my listeners. I hope you enjoyed meeting Michael as much as I did. You can find out more about Michael and his award-winning books on Michael's website, pmmichaelreedy.com. Let me spell that. I don't think I've quite got it right. pmmichaelreedy.com. pmichaelreedy.com. As always, a huge thank you for joining me, and I can't wait to share your company again very soon. Until next time, I hope the sun is shining on your face and in your heart. And don't forget, you can find out more about me on my website, paulinebarclay.co.uk. Ta-ta for now.